Koya.
This is Robbie.
Welcome to Uncharted.
And thanks for joining us again. Welcome back to another great episode of Uncharted and Eclectic. I got my good friends, Pete and Andrew, who are the co-founders of CoSell, a company I've been fortunate enough to work with very, very closely for many months. Pete, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you. So one of the reasons I wanted to ask these two fellows to join, I think one of the things as a non-technical entrepreneur, somebody that's not really in the weeds in the world of SaaS or startups, I've always wondered, like, how do non-technical people go and find their technical co-founder, somebody that's on the engineering front? So Pete, talk to us a little bit about, like, what is CoSell, but more importantly, what was the experience of attracting Andrew and recruiting him to CoSell?
Oh man. Okay. So this really goes back to May 2019. So at the time, right, I'm over at Trello. So Trello ends up getting acquired by Atlassian. Super excited about the acquisition because Atlassian has, you know, 100,000 customers. Trello has 500 enterprise customers, right? So what I realized really quickly is, like, okay, we can absolutely leverage that Atlassian sales team to get in front of more customers, right? And so the best we ended up coming up with was a channel called Referrals for Sales inside of Slack. So every day I would go in and say, hey, who on that Atlassian side owns Walmart, right? And then someone on that Atlassian side would say, oh, it's Jill. And then Jill would make the intro for the rep on my team, right? And so I think most sales leaders know that the existing demand gen channels, so think cold outreach, right? You know, marketing, demand, digital advertising, those are natural resources that are quickly diminishing. And so referrals is kind of this one untapped potential. So we'll kind of circle back to May 2019. I hire a Uruguayan dev shop, right? And you know, I quickly realized that you have to have, like, everything super spec'd out. They overbuilt the product completely. And so I had reached out. I was introduced to Scott Klein, who's the founder of StatusPage, former CEO and co-founder. Reached out to him and I said, hey, you know, I'd love your thoughts on, like, what we're building, so on and so forth. And if you know of anyone in your network, you know, it'd be awesome to get the intro, right? So Scott and I chat a few times. He's like, okay, I can actually help you guys out. So we worked with Scott for a long while. And then, you know, Scott's recently had a kid and, you know, he's kind of slowed down a little bit after the acquisition of StatusPage with Atlassian. And so Scott actually introduced me to Andrew. And so Andrew's co-founder and CTO, and he's done a terrific job of building the product and got us to where we're at today. And essentially, you know, we're solving that problem of referrals. And referral partnerships come in really many different forms, right? Come in working with your advisors, it can come with working with your investors, it can come with working with other partners, other companies in your space that are non-competitive, going after the same market to drive referrals through them. And then as of recently, it can come in the form of working with the CoSell Sales Hub, CoSell Marketing Hub. And, you know, you can partner with us and we have a collection of some of the world's best influencers like Brennan Cassidy, my co-founder, our co-founder, Scott Leese, Colin Cadmus, Jason Lincoln, et cetera. So
love it. So anything you want to add to that, Andrew?
You know, when you have three founders, co-founder is always a weird thing to say. I feel like there should be like a tri-founder, right? Yeah. my tri-founder. no, it's a good description of the overview. You asked the question, how do you recruit a technical co-founder when you're not a technical person yourself? And Pete didn't completely answer that. He said that Scott made the intro. So I'll just say, I think that is... To expand that a little bit, that is the key, is to use your network and find people who you can trust, find your advisors, investors, whoever you know that does have more of a technical background. And, you know, in Pete's case, his connection to Scott was through Atlassian. You know, they worked together a little bit. Scott had those technical skills to come in and do some of the work to help CoSell along. And then for Scott, it was very easy in his network to say, you know, who do I know that would be a good fit for this? Scott and I then were catching up. He didn't, you know, try to recruit me or anything. He and I were catching up one day, summer of 2020. And I mentioned to him that I felt like, for various reasons, I might not stay at Atlassian that much longer. And he said to me, oh, well, you know, if that's the case, I know this startup in Austin that really needs a CTO and you might be really interested in. And I'll be honest with you, my initial reaction to that was, yeah, no, sorry, I'm not going to do a little baby startup out of Austin. That's just not going to happen. But Scott's a friend, and he spoke very kindly of Pete and what he was working on. So I said, oh, sure, whatever, I'll take a call. Never hurts to meet somebody interesting. And then, you know, from there, the conversation just progressed, and I actually got interested in the job and decided to do it. But the key there was, Pete didn't really try to hire the CTO directly. That probably would have not turned out great. Like, instead, he leaned on Scott, who is an engineer and knows what he's doing and knows a lot of other engineers. And we use that same technique. We'll see, hopefully a year from now, we'll say glowing things about this as well. But like, we recently just hired a lead designer who starts in a couple of weeks. And same thing, that none of us have a real product design background. So it's not an easy hire for us to make. And so we reached out through our advisor network and were able to get some help in interviewing and kind of getting to know candidates. And we're able to get some great feedback from our advisors on who would be a good hire. And that led to, you know, that led to this next hire as well. So I think that's kind of the pattern I would say is use your network and find the people who you do know, even if they're not able to join you right now. I think that's one thing people think with their network is like, oh yeah, I know some people, but they all have great jobs. They wouldn't join me right now. Well, that's probably true, yeah. Right? But they might know somebody who would be a great fit. And that's probably the biggest opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you guys eat your own dog food at CoSell. Go through the network.
Yeah, that's right.
I love it. Well, thanks for the actionable wisdom. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
When hiring gets hard, you need Indeed, the job site that makes hiring incredibly simple. Just attract, interview, and hire. In fact, with Indeed, you can do all of your hiring in one place, even interviewing. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/scale. That's Indeed.com/scale. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome back. So we talked in the first part about how you recruit. Now you've been working together for many months, right? And I'm really curious, whoever wants to start, like if somebody's listening to this and they've recruited like a technical co-founder, maybe they're not technical, they're in the early stages of building. Looking back, what are some of like the biggest tips that you have that you think are very transferable to other relationships that make that relationship really, really strong? In other words, if somebody's non-technical or technical and they don't understand the other person's job, like what tips do you have for them to maximize that relationship and that working relationship?
Yeah. So I would say when you look at Brent and I's experience, right, it's very much so on the sales side, right? And Andrew's experience is very much so on the technical side. So really, you know, the conventional wisdom would say, oh, well, you need a head of product, right, to kind of like sit in the middle. And we've kind of like debated this, right? Like, hey, do we need a head of product to sit in the middle? I think at our stage, though, it doesn't make sense, right? Because, you know, at the end of the day, the communication, right, just kind of becomes diluted with the more people that you have on the team. And so like what we've evolved to doing, and by no means have we nailed this and are we perfect at it, is really documentation, right? So yeah, on the sales side, right, when we're having conversations, like we need to be documenting what we're hearing from customers so we can relay that over to Andrew and team. And yeah, I mean, Andrew, how do you think it's going so far? And you know, what are the areas that you think we can improve on even?
Yeah, well, I think to give a slightly higher level answer to that and then circle back into what you just asked. So when you are the technical partner coming in, there's like an easy mode and a hard mode. So if you are building a company that is also technical and it's a customer base or audience, that's typically easy because you can imagine yourself using the tool, using the service, like you understand the pain that's being solved for. And there's a lot of technical jobs that are like that, where, you know, you're working on something like GitHub that's for developers. And it's just so easy to understand what the product needs when you yourself are a user. So I think the thing you have to first do if you're entering as a technical co-founder into something where you're not the user is you just have to get really interested in the use case and who the users are and like get to know them. And then, you know, you have to understand that your co-founders hopefully are chief subject matter experts. So for me joining CoSell, that was one of the big selling points to me was, okay, I've got these two guys, Pete and Brendan, who have a great track record and who really understand what's going on here and who I can lean on as subject matter experts. And then for me, what I'm always looking to do is try to drag out of them the sort of five whys of why do they want to do stuff. So, you know, they'll have a lot of context in their heads on, oh, you know, well, I think we just need to stick this thing here. Or I think we should make a page that does something like this. But it's not usually obvious to me, like, what is that for? Or like, what do we want out of it? And the hard thing is that it might seem like there's a superficial reason, you know, that, okay, this screen needs to collect some information so that we have that information. And you think to yourself, okay, great. Well, that's fine. I get it. We need that information. We'll collect it. But why do we need that information? Right? Like, what are we going to do with it after we get it? What happens if people use this a whole lot? What happens if people don't use it at all? Like, what if we build this and no one clicks on it? What does that tell us? And if you don't understand those things, then you're not really able to plan very far ahead. You're not really able to strategize. You're not really able to sort of think that two or three steps ahead and line up your product work so that it kind of starts to snowball and build on itself. So I think for us, like the communication has just been a lot of iteration on learning how to understand each other's jargon and lingo, and a lot of iteration on digging deeper into the conversation, not just saying, okay, here, build this, but rather like, okay, why do we want to build this? Why do we want to build that? And try to dig deeper and really understand it. And then the stuff that we build is a lot higher chance of being successful or hitting the goals that we have for it.
You nailed that answer. That was it. I feel like that's been an evolution for, you know, Brendan and I really is, you know, because we'll hear something from a customer, right? And in our heads, it's like, okay, we got to get this thing built so we can get this deal done, right? But actually taking a step back and kind of slowing down to say, okay, well, what does this mean? And how is this going to impact the other aspects of the product and our overall strategy, so on and so forth. So yeah, I think there's been learning for us, right, on the sales side of, hey, we need to get better at documentation. We need to be communicating regularly and taking the feedback that we're hearing from customers and kind of digesting that and trying like product, getting like product and customer and sales and, you know, all these pieces to kind of come together. So, but no, I liked what you said around, you know, just on the technical side, right? Like if I was trying to learn, well, I guess I am in some form, right? Like learning the technical side, right? You're having to ramp up, right? And you've had to ramp up, right? Over the last 7-8 months of like, okay, what is sales? What is an SDR? What is a account manager? How are these people measured, right?
Yeah.
So it's been interesting.
So over-communicating, aligning on the jargon, and just having a ton of empathy, I think, for one another.
Yeah, and focus on the why.
Yeah.
Focus on the why.
Okay. Well, this has been great. My last question, there's a couple of questions, but my last question on this topic, looking back, what's been one thing that's like really, really surprised you about this journey? Like something that you were not expecting at all?
I mean, well, this is really specific, so I don't know how universal this would be, but I think just we had last fall a very specific set of ideas for what we thought the product was going to do and how it needed to work, and within 2 months from my point of view, within 2 months of me joining, we had really uncovered with customers that a bunch of our sort of fundamental assumptions were kind of backwards. And we ended up doing a very hard pivot where, you know, it felt like the end destination we were going was still the same, but the how we were going to get there changed completely.
Yeah.
You know, so in our case, it had to do with connecting directly to people's CRMs and having that be an integrated experience versus having people upload their data sort of manually.
Sure.
And we were shocked to discover that people actually didn't like the integrated experience as much as they liked the manual experience. Like that was really shocking, right?
Yeah.
But it turned out to be a really good decision that has helped unblock us and allow us to be a lot more flexible and nimble. But I think, yeah, to just make that generic, you just never know when the ideas that seem so obvious, you test them with customers and maybe they're not true at all. Like you might just be completely wrong.
Yeah.
And you have to not cling to those ideas. You have to be ready and willing to say, okay, well, turns out that we thought that, you know, down was down and actually down is up. And so let's just flip this all over and go the other way. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. For me, it's been somewhat of like a pleasant surprise. Right. And so, you know, over at Trello, right. Like we never had any issues with leads, right. Because there was this product led growth scenario and we had PQLs, MQLs, SQLs, like, you know, coming out of our ears. And I'd been there, right, for 5 years. You know, I kind of forgot, like, until I started speaking with customers, right, like how hard it is to break into accounts now. And I think even 5 years ago, like I was one of the first customers using email automation, like in the early days. I loved it, right? Because I could be sleeping and emails were going out. I could be at the lunch, emails were going out. And I think just, you know, as more and more companies have kind of adopted that strategy, it's just created a ton of noise in the market. So it kind of always surprises me, like when I'm speaking with a startup and they're just saying like, hey, we're desperate for something different, right?
Yeah. So the problem you tried to solve, you're surprised by how much bigger it was.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. There's a lot, it feels like there's a lot of pain there.
Yeah.
And so it gives us a lot of energy to wake up every day and feel excited about what we're doing.
Good. Well, everybody listening, go check out Pete and Andrew. We'll put their contact information in the show notes. Go check out CoSell.io. They're doing a lot of exciting things. Tell them Poya from Uncharted Podcast sent you. And with that said, the one question we absolutely love asking everybody before we say our goodbyes, if you could go back in time, the older, wiser you, what's one advice you would give yourself? We'll start with Andrew this time.
I don't think this is going to be what you were thinking, but I would go back to myself in like 2007 or so, 2008, right when the iPhone had come out. And I spent a lot of time thinking about diving in and building a bunch of mobile apps and that I thought that'd be really cool, but I really didn't know how to build for that environment. Didn't know how to program against the Apple ecosystem. And I would tell myself to just freaking do it because holy shit, man, if you were like one of the first 1,000 apps in the store, right? And I regret that I didn't jump on that harder, you know? So
lots of good transferable lessons
in that one. Right. There's nothing. No, being a little bit more serious, I guess I would just say like, I don't know, it's hard to make it universal, but I think worry less about what other people are doing and worry less about missing out. Like don't let FOMO be a driver of your decisions. I think that's something that's been hard for me to learn, but as I finally have kind of gotten my head around that you can only control what you do. You can't control what other people do. Stress less about competition. Like you got to focus on making your own product good. If you make decisions based on what your competitors are doing, you're already losing.
Yeah.
You know, they're outplaying you just by the fact that your strategy is just to try and dance around them and so you have to do your own thing.
Eliminate the noise, focus on your North Star. That's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah.
Eliminate the noise, go with your North Star. Love it. And Pete?
Yeah, no, I agree with that one. I would say in my 20s, I probably viewed life in more of a sprint versus a marathon. And I think, you know, I was at LinkedIn in the early days and that was a rocket ship. And, you know, there was actually that FOMO, right? Of feeling like, okay, you know, I'm producing these results and, you know, why aren't I getting promoted within, you know, 3 months or whatever, just like, you know, slow it down and know that, you know, you've got your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, if you want to work in your 60s, great to do great things. So view things in the longer term, right. Versus, kind of just really quick short-term wins.
Yeah. And don't overburden yourself, as people say. Well, thanks so much, gentlemen, for coming on the show. Everybody listening, again, thank you for being with us. Until next time, be well, be safe, and catch you on the next episode.